second that I'm still packing my bowl up here.
they made them quick, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, to the point, right? A little Smokey Robinson there, and pause with me for a moment, folks. I myself will be a little Smokey Robinson. All right.
Yeah. Motown.
I love it, man. I'm a huge Motown fan. I think the guy who started the Motown, scandalous fella, if I'm not mistaken, involved with the Michael Jackson, right? Motown is where the Jackson 5 got the big start, if I'm not mistaken.
What is Motown?
Motown was a record label.
Record label.
Yeah, it was a Forrest Bias situation, man. I believe it was like kind of the clap back to all the white man run labels, and you finally had like something tried and true for the other fellas in our society, and it was a huge success, dude. Motown was incredible. Quincy Jones, I think, started the Motown, if I'm not mistaken.
This is Berry Gordy.
Okay, white guy. No, it was Berry Gordy, Detroit. Yeah.
Yeah. The artists, though, it's amazing. It's all the great artists.
All the greats, man. And it dominated.
Marvin Gaye, Supremes.
I mean, you're talking 20, 30 years of dominating the charts, right? I'm sure there's some scandalous stuff. Good thing they didn't have a P. Diddy on their team, right? Have you looked more into this?
They probably just, you know, the guys probably fucked the girls. And
dude, you know, they kept it. Some of the court documents coming out about the P. Diddy situation are including like how he had his whole house or his mansion wired and tapped and video cameras everywhere, and he threw these extravagant parties, like sex parties with celebrities and politicians. I mean, it's basically kind of coming out that P. Diddy was like the, you know, the entertainment Jeffrey Epstein, man. I mean, I think this dude got some compromising shit on people.
But for what?
Oh, who knows? Who's power. He working for? Who's Diddy working with, man, right? He's got to be involved with one of these agencies, maybe all of them, you know? I mean, if he's wiretapping and video recording and throwing wild sex parties and drug-fueled orgies and what have you with celebrities and politicians, you got to think that the same fellas, the same people involved with Epstein were probably involved here and, you know, getting all the compromising stuff, man. The compromise.
So you're saying it was the Jews?
I try not to point fingers in any specific direction, you know. Yeah. I like to be alive. But I suggest. I just offer alleged suggestions. That's kind of where I'm headed there. You don't want to mess, you don't want to mess with those people, man. I mean, look what happens. You fly in a few paragliders over the border, and they disrupt a couple music venues, and then all of a sudden, you're looking at a complete annihilation of a country. It's pretty wild.
Did you see the pictures of Gaza?
It's rubbleized, man. It's completely gone.
Dude, they were like, we're trying to drop aid. Aid? These people need a city. They don't need aid. There's nothing. It's literally rubble.
Yeah, man. They eliminated Gaza from the map. We knew it was going to happen.
That's what you get when you attack them like you did. I mean, there's still videos coming out about from that massacre at that music festival. That
it was a brutal situation followed by a brutal response. And we're now going to see the aftermath, which will, and I've said it from day one, right or wrong, the gates were opened for the pathway of complete rubbleization and bombardment from the bigger power. And, you know, it doesn't matter what side you're on, it was an invitation. The door was opened, you know, and so now Israel is just, they're wiping this place off the map. That's just what that's their opportunity to do it, and it's, you know.
Yeah, you can't punch the biggest guy in the bar and then get mad when he fights you.
I gotta say, though, with this situation unfolding over there, our reaction, as is always the case, the public reaction, I mean, we're doing, this is COVID-19 stuff all over again, man, the lunacy. The protesting, the shutting down of the traffic, throwing the soup on the Monet, Just, you know what I'm saying? They're doing all this wacky stuff. I did not think it would maximize or get to the apex, if you will, of this Aaron Bushnell, U.S. Airman fella. Did you see this dude online this week?
Oh, yes.
Horrifying.
Oh, anybody who wants a clue that our military is not good, not in good shape right now, look at this fucking guy. Set himself on fire for Palestine?
Amy Goodman reported on it, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but they interviewed a representative for the Gaza Strip, a Palestinian, and he's quoted as saying that he wouldn't recommend anybody do that, and that the guy who did this clearly had a mental illness. Yeah.
Yeah! I mean, how... Yeah, dude. What... So now our soldiers are sacrificing themselves for Hamas?
It's a really weird hill to die on, okay? I'm just throwing it out there. You, to be a service member for our country and set yourself on fire in honor of a terrorist organization, dude, we have gone full fucking circle from 9/11, man. What happened here?
Oh, yes, and how many more are in the military? That's what I'm telling you. This is what happens when you lower standards, you know, and you're desperate for anybody to join.
I get it with the confusion, you know, our media, the state propaganda that is just on, you know, full attack mode at all times through every media device. I get it. You know, you're easily swayed one way or the other. But to believe you have to light yourself on fire and die for a terrorist group, it's a terrorist group, man. I mean... You know, yes, it's insane what Israel is doing in response, but don't forget that they're responding to a terror attack from a terrorist group. You know, like
as a terrorist group who this whole country voted for.
It's crazy.
You know what I mean?
I just, dude,
Hamas still has overwhelming support from the Palestinian people. I need people to understand that. I get that it's unpleasant to say that women and children should be executed, but you people have gone so crazy, you're supporting Hamas. I got no pity for you.
It's
know?
Just so crazy to me. Again, I cannot stress enough, we're just 20 years removed from, we changed French fries to freedom fries because the French weren't supporting us in our war against the terrorists.
Yeah, I know.
That's how united we were, man. You know, like, against this common enemy, you know, an enemy who has no borders, an enemy that is a terror cell that will attack at will citizens in any scenario or setting, right? You know, the 9/11 towers. Right after that, people forget it was, what, 2007 in July? What terrorist group was behind the bombing of the subways in London?
Yeah, that's right.
7/7, I think, was the date or whatever. I mean, everybody forgets about that stuff. We had the common enemy. And maybe the enemy was sponsored, paid for, and probably just actors of our own governments, secret agencies trying to control us and take our freedoms. Very possible. You know, I'm not dismissing
that. Yeah, it was 7/7, July 7th, but 2005. And it was just carried out. They just say Islamic terrorists.
It's crazy, man. I'm still cruising through that Chaos book about the Charlie Manson murders, and the writer talks about a moment where he's trying to rationalize the fact that there were these two simultaneous counterintelligence programs going on operating within the United States against United States citizens, and one was FBI, one was CIA, and the CIA was Chaos, and the, you know, FBI was COINTELPRO, and they're manipulating assets on, you know, in the home turf, and he's kind of going through and pouring through old newspapers, and he stumbles upon the front page of like the New York Times or Washington Post from 1967 or 69, and on it he's staring at two main headlines, both ended up being completely fictitious. They were total lies, created by the Chaos and COINTEL programs, but they were sweeping the country at the time, and they were on the front page, and one was the CIA disinformation, you know, and the other was FBI disinformation, and that they were right there, front page, for the entire country to read, and that's where we were getting our news at that time. And, you know, to just look back at that, and then, you know, think, like, wow, even in the 60s, man, like, our newspaper was just filled with disinformation specifically created by our own intelligence agencies, you know, to confuse us.
Then why
us.
Aren't they doing it now?
Yes, they're you definitely, know what I mean? They're doing it now on a very sophisticated scale.
Yes, which is much larger.
Absolutely.
They've taken over all media, Hollywood, everything.
So this,
you know?
This poor fella, man, he's in the throes of this mass propaganda disinformation campaign from probably alphabet letter agencies we've never even heard of within the CIA and NSA and DIA and all this stuff. And you know, and he's now confused, conflicted, his mind's all warped. He's a service member and he goes, I'm going to go set myself on fire because I've now been so manipulated and brainwashed. I'm supporting a terrorist organization.
I don't know, dude. That's a crazy step to take. That guy had some mental illness.
For sure, but look at these people protesting for Hamas. It's gotten a little ridiculous. I mean, let's call it what it is. You're supporting a terrorist organization. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, you definitely been brainwashed. Yeah, you definitely been brainwashed.
Yes, we see the atrocities going on from the war, but maybe instead of picking a side, just stay out of it. Right? You could just stay out of it.
Don't block traffic.
You don't have to support the oppressor here, but you know, why must you go out there and wear the colors of the other team and that happens to be a bunch of terrorists?
Yeah, that's a good call. You could just not care.
Yeah, we got our own freaking problems. Have you seen the video footage sweeping online of homeless people and street dwellers just whacked out on Trank? The new drug of choice for those in the urban areas. You got to look it up. It's TRANQ, Trank. And it's this new super dope that just zombifies people. And I'm not kidding. I think there's even some element of like skin decay where they start kind of turning into the zombies that we've seen over the last couple decades on TV. But yeah, dude, Trank, man, it's really huge in the Philadelphia area. That's where I'm seeing some of the videos. But I've seen locally, there's some people doing some good work on the online forums there here in Denver. They're trying to spread the word out on the decay of our society in the urban region in Colorado.
That's crazy. It's a horse tranquilizer, dude.
That's right.
Like, it's for large animals.
Oh, yeah.
It's not approved for use in humans. What it's xylazine.
Xylazine. Wow. Is
yeah,
that that
it's like
one?
A pharmaceutical.
It's the commercial with the owl.
No.
Zaslo?
No. It's something else. Wow. But they're mixing it with fentanyl. Oh, this just sounds crazy.
Man.
To increase the effects.
Wow. Dude, give me that fentanyl, but can you throw in some horse tranquilizer? I want to get really fucked up.
Oh, man. Frank, that fentanyl you've been selling me just isn't cutting it. Can you put some horse medicine in there?
This is how bad Bidenomics is, people. The folks just want to escape reality. We're doing the fentanyl mixed with the horse tranquilizer.
That's insane.
Just get me out of this world, man.
You know, the fentanyl you gave me, I felt a little too energetic after using it. Tossing some tranquilizer. I want to be dosed out on the street.
Oh,
man, that's insane. Yeah. This is really bad, yeah.
It's not good, and the effects are pretty frightening. I mean, these people, if you take a look at the video, there's nothing doctored going on. These drugged out, tranked out people, they like lean over but are still walking and standing in a weird way, so they're kind of like hobbling and wobbling, and they look tranked out. That's the only way you could describe it. The zombification of our society is nearly complete, and I think there are some new diseases sweeping through or coming up through the border. I saw Laura Logan was down in like Peru or something on the scene where she's like reporting on these migrant caravans coming up into Texas, and there's this new like flesh-eating disease that's sweeping through the South Central Americas, and they're projecting it's going to make its way to America at any point.
Oh, of course. You know, it's going to be great when we call Anthony Fauci out of retirement.
Yes, of course.
They're going to have to.
And it's too bad, man.
This is crazy. Make sure you buy some stock in Bayer.
Bayer, really?
Well, that's who's selling most of it.
Wow, they're selling the Trank.
Yeah. You know, like Purdue Pharma, if you bought in early and then got out before everybody, you know, realized they were killing the world.
That's right, man. These companies are crazy. They end up having these massive lawsuits go down. They fork up the dough, and then out of nowhere, you realize that they're behind some epidemic sweeping the country.
Yeah, that's why they could afford to pay off that debt.
That's right, man. We're going to make a new crack. It's called Trank. It's with the fentanyl and some of the bear. Everybody's happy. Everyone gets paid.
I mean, is fentanyl just not killing enough people?
I know. Not fast enough, man. And everybody stopped taking the COVID vaccine, so we started doping everybody up with Wegovy to liquefy their insides and give them the stomach paralysis, but now people aren't taking that because of the bad side effects, so we got to go with Trank.
Man. Imagine when they start mixing fentanyl with the COVID vaccine.
I know.
That's
gonna
be, woo.
The mRNA Trank vaccine. Oh, yeah. Wow. Damn. So we were watching some television last night, two nights ago. I, you know, had a guest in town. And so apparently they're really big into the RuPaul's drag show. That's on there. So I was entertained for an evening with some RuPaul's drag show. I gotta say, just as I remember it, they didn't skip a beat. You know, I remember back in the day, it's been on for 16 seasons.
Are you serious?
And I did a little Wikipedia quickly on the RuPaul, because I was curious, like, where did RuPaul come from, and how did RuPaul almost become the poster child, if you will, for this revolutionary time we find ourselves in, where all fat bearded men can wear dresses and makeup and feel very confident about themselves. And so, I was just kind of Googling around there, and I saw, like, wow, the RuPaul's drag show started in 2008. What else started in 2008? Oh, yes. Wow. That's right. That was the first year of the Obama administration.
The first year we had a tranny first lady.
We're talking Big Mike.
Big Mike.
Are you ready for Big Mike? Big Mike.
That was the year big black men became the most beautiful women in America.
Yeah, yeah, right? All women from that point forward had the shoulders of a linebacker. That's not Julius Peppers. That's Michelle Obama, you racist.
You racist bigot. She's a beautiful woman.
More beautiful than that foreign exotic supermodel who we'll never name. Melania who? No, she's hideous. Now look at this black man.
She doesn't look like she could carry a...
Time for Big Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. Great times, right? We're so
RuPaul, huh? 16 years?
16 glorious years of cultural indoctrination that we've had on our television sets.
There's that many people watching it. Like, think about it, in 16 years, since 2008, how many good shows have been canceled?
I went down a mental rabbit hole here, just kind of really contemplating the societal changes we went through since that time. You know, the last 16 years, we have seen quite the upheaval. We went from seeing no difference between us because of our skin colors to everyone's racist and we're all divided by each tone of skin color. It was a wild swing just in that regard. And then we also went from, you know, Home Improvement and, you know, Mike Rowe doing the dirty jobs to, oh, that's toxic masculinity, and now all men wear dresses and makeup.
Dude, you're right. In 16 years, we went from sex was binary and right. race was just a fluid spectrum, you know, couldn't really pinpoint anybody anywhere.
It's crazy.
So now gender is the spectrum.
Yes.
And your race is very binary. You're either white or you're a POC.
Yes. And you're the, that's right. And we're going to exclude all the white. If you're white, yeah, you're not allowed on commercials anymore. Unless you're a lesbian and a woman. But used to be a man.
Oh, yeah. You can be a white man if you say you're a woman. Just like one.
So I'm watching the show and I have a very open mind about it and I'm enjoying it. It's entertaining. It's hilarious. The typical tropes of a reality show are still there. The bickering, the fighting, the dramatic, weird noises and camera angles that are probably cropped and edited at other times, but they use them to, you know, pass some sort of narrative. Clearly acted by C to D list actors who can't get actual jobs in Hollywood, so they're doing these reality shows, and it's just, you know, it's funny, you know, and kind of watching through. But I noticed something interesting, and it was especially obvious as I was reading up on RuPaul. And if you read up on RuPaul and the RuPaul Wikipedia, you'll notice one key specific about the narrative of RuPaul. That everything is he. It's he this, he did that, he went to school there, then he started this show, and then he created RuPaul's Drag Race. He.
Yeah, he's a he him.
Because RuPaul's he. But then on the show, all these dudes who are not in their makeup, they're just putting together their costumes and what have you, refer to each other as she.
Hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting dynamic, and that's the change, right? RuPaul's from a time when RuPaul entered the scene, there was no focus on that, right? Because we weren't telling you how to talk to us. We were asking you to accept us when RuPaul was entering the scene. But now we've fast forward 16 years later, now we're doing our full month celebration of us. We're reading to your kids in your library locally. And also, you have to refer to us by whatever pronouns we demand. And you must, you know, allow us into every element of your society.
Yeah, including running the military.
Yes.
Fucking insane. So that's fucking insane.
I'm watching the show and I was just noticing even the language and how they refer to each other. Wow, what a change from when, you know. You got the RuPaul, the original, the OG, and then now you have these new iterations, these new versions, these millennials, man, and they're very, you know, particular about the words.
So, yeah, I can't believe the ratings are that good on this show,
dude. It's a hip show. I think you know it's happening. It's up there with The Bachelor and all the other good stuff, man. Oh yeah.
I can't believe it's doing that good.
Another interesting tidbit about the viewing of the RuPaul's Drag Race, and I think it's on MTV, if I'm not mistaken. Almost every single commercial was a Big Pharma commercial.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. I think maybe one or two was like a movie, you know, some sort of Deadpool or something advert, but it was all primarily, you know, sandwich, basically. You'd get the pharmaceutical ad, movie ad for a Marvel Disney flick, pharmaceutical ad, back to the RuPaul drag show.
Oh, for sure. Dude, that guy makes $12 million a year for doing 12 episodes.
Yes. RuPaul's a genius, man. This guy really, he capitalized on a movement before it was anything.
Dude, they're saying it's the highest rated show. There's no way.
I believe it. I fully believe it, actually.
It's just dudes dancing as women?
Oh, it's very entertaining. I mean, I had a good time watching it, but
I knew you were gay. God, I went through asking the wrong guy.
Three quarters, folks. We're back to three quarters out that closet. Oh, yeah.
I'm asking the wrong guy.
It was a fun show, but I just was, when I read the 16 years, I was like, man, we have gone down quite the slippery slope in the last 16 years. 2008 kind of feels like a benchmark moment in time.
Yeah.
And just about...
Yeah, because that's what it was. 2008, Barack Obama was the response to the, like, ultra-American time of, you know, conservative and ultra-American Bush years.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Well, Bush, too, he was the evangelical, right? So it's kind of the Christian thing. And now, I don't know if you've been paying attention... I didn't clip it for the show, but like Michael Moore is out there. You know, Michael Moore is claiming he spearheaded the movement to get the uncommitted voting for Biden in Michigan.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Nobody is listening to you, dude.
Dude, you know who's on the Ozempic? Michael Moore. I can guarantee you that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's slim and trim now, man.
Dude, no. Nobody's listening to you ever since you were the millionaire that showed up to the March Against Millionaires to talk about how you were like one of the people. That's
right. The millionaire who's with the people.
The millionaire.
Marching against himself.
All these homeless guys sleeping on Wall Street. You know what I mean? What a...
Yeah, he was back. He was doing the rounds this weekend. I'm assuming he's going to be on Bill Maher pretty soon, be my guess. He's all about the... getting the voice of the Palestinians through to Joe Biden and the Democrats.
Are you serious?
He's all in, man.
Oh,
yeah.
God. This guy's got to be boosted, man. When's his turn to stroke out?
They're claiming, that it's up to Joe Biden to side with them. Otherwise, they're going to hand the election to Trump.
All right, good.
Well, speaking of the...
What do they think? Trump's going to back the Hamas? I don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. He's against Hamas. So I think he's kind of pro-American.
But Michael Moore wants Joe Biden. I'm just saying, how is that... I don't know.
He wants...
I'm calling your bluff here. I don't think you guys are going to vote for Donald Trump.
No, they're going to just not vote. That's the plan.
They're going to vote.
Of course they will. Yeah, have you seen any of the delusion going on or the reaction to the Supreme Court this week and their decision to hear the Trump case or whatever it is? Everybody lost their mind. There was a full-scale meltdown at MSNBC. It was unreal.
Oh, I know. I know.
They're still trying
to... It's going to be really funny when he doesn't get tried for anything before the election.
Well, that's what they're freaking out about. It took them 20 minutes to resuscitate Rachel Maddow, bring her back to life. It was incredible. They used the smelling salts and everything, man.
Let her slip into the dark next time.
So, Bill Maher, I only caught a few snippets of his show, but I saw something trending that I really enjoyed, and it was from his after show that he does, where he takes the questions from YouTube or something. I don't know where he airs this, but... every once in a while, some good stuff happens that they don't air on the HBO. Did you see any of this floating around over the last couple days?
Yeah. It's a good episode. Dude, you gotta watch him with Dr. Phil. It's unbelievable.
How is the interaction?
Dr. Phil makes a comment about how, like, just the basic comment of we gotta stop confusing equity and equality, you know what I mean? And that's Bill right. Maher just won't let it go that, like, he's... Dr. Phil's just very political, and he's just being political. And it's like, okay, but certain things shouldn't be considered political, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
You're right on the money.
It's a weird conversation.
Gonna have to check it out. Dr. Phil's been making the rounds. He's speaking a lot of truth. I'm a big fan. I assume he's selling a book.
It's funny because Dr. Phil's pretty centrist.
Right.
And so
yeah.
Bill Maher, who always claims to be centrist, is sitting there like fighting this guy. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, dude, you're on the left, buddy. You're a Democrat. It's okay.
He's a man of the middle, Mike. Come on, man.
Yeah. Okay.
Either way, I have a clip from after their little program here, and one of the guests dropped some truth, and it seemed a little uncomfortable for Bill and company, but the crowd loved it, and I've been really enjoying whenever I watch the Bill Maher these days, especially this year. His crowd, not totally on board with him anymore in his outlandish liberal concepts. I think his crowd is more in the middle than he is, and that's kind of... Actually, he's running into some... weird moments, and this is one of them. I love the response from the audience, and this chick, she's dropping some truths, and I'm a big fan of you know, people like our parents, you know, checking this stuff out, or, you know, getting exposed to, you know, people actually in the middle.
Should Democrats be worried about the 100,000 uncommitted votes in the Michigan primary? Oh, yes, I read about this. Will protest votes over Biden's policy in Gaza cost him the election in the fall? If people don't know what we're talking about, Michigan just had a primary. Michigan has a large Muslim population. They're not too thrilled that Joe Biden is supporting Israel in its war. And so 100,000 people voted uncommitted. These are Democratic voters who apparently seem to be saying we are threatening to... support Trump, a known lover of Muslims. But this is a wedge issue in the Democratic Party. The young people, the kids, and Muslim voters like this don't want him supporting Israel. Many other people do. What are your thoughts?
I think that the media really, really wants to put this narrative out there that Biden is going to lose Michigan over Gaza, when the truth is he's going to lose Michigan over 600,000 auto workers, because his EV market was extremely punishing to auto workers. And like we said earlier, there's been this big realignment where working class Americans are very, very, very much on the Trump train, people who used to be Democrats and used to vote for Democrats. And rather than admit that, this outrage that Democrats lost the working class vote, and try to figure out how we can appeal to them again, they're looking for excuses and other things to blame, like, oh, this war in Gaza, or they'll call them deplorables, or they'll call them racists, you know, because they don't want to admit that Trump has picked up a lot of the policies that used to be Democratic policies in the 90s, like controlling the border, for example. The idea that an open border and mass migration is extremely punishing to the working class. It drives down their wages. It's class warfare against the working class. It is an upward transfer of wealth from the working class, who end up competing with immigrants, to the elites, who end up employing them. And now they can employ cheap immigrants instead of having to pay working class Americans a living wage. Thanks, guys.
The throat clear heard around the world.
Now let's get a retort from Bill. Inflation doesn't affect me, Mar. And, you know, he'll tell the real truth.
View from the center. That's view from the center.
Who has felt no effects of the migration happening at the southern border and doesn't even know what Bidenflation means. Or no, it's Bidenomics. Did I just create a new one? Bidenflation?
Yeah, I like Bidenflation better.
Yeah, man. That's what we're dealing with here. Hey, a little honesty out there for the people to hear in the real world. You know, Bill Maher can't handle that, man. That's some real truth.
Oh, I thought you were going to play his clip. Yeah.
No, that's all. That was all I had.
Oh.
Fuck Bill Maher. I'm not going to listen to him. I like his guests, not him. Why? I'm trying to think.
What did he say in the beginning? There was something that really pissed me off that he said in the beginning.
Of that clip right there?
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm trying to think of what it was.
Should Democrats be worried about the 100,000 uncommitted votes in the Michigan primary? Oh, yes, I read about this. Will protest votes over Biden's policy?
Oh, I don't remember what it was. Because he made the comment that Donald Trump, a known lover of Muslims, and then everybody started laughing.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one. Good joke.
Dude, like, just like 2 minutes ago, you guys were criticizing him and his family for being buddy-buddy with the Saudi princes.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So which one is it, guys? Which one is it? You know? maybe you should be more honest with your comments and say, yeah, Trump, not a big fan of Muslim extremists, kind of known for wiping out Islamic terrorists like ISIS.
Yeah, they don't like the nuance, man. They're not into that, right?
Do you know what I mean? It's not that he hates Muslims. He clearly has no... He just signed that... One of the things they hate him for is that agreement he signed with LIV Golf.
Yes, that's right. And this is the United Emirates or Saudi? Is it Saudi Arabian?
It's Muslim. Either one, you know?
It's Muslim. You're right. It's a Muslim-owned golf company. And everybody hated him for being aligned with it or one of the financiers. I don't know. I thought this guy's...
He signed a deal with them to do the tournament at Mar-a-Lago.
This dude simultaneously is broke and overvaluing everything he has, but he's also got all this money to, like, you know, own hotels, golf courses. He's starting a golf league with the Saudis. Like, I can't get... How do you maintain both narratives simultaneously?
I know. He's a broke loser businessman who hates Muslims. At the same time, he's signing $100 million deals with the Saudis. Frank, what don't you understand?
It's insane, man.
The best, to top it all off, who does he send to make a deal with the Muslims? His Jewish son-in-law. What are we talking about here, people? I don't think it gets through to them that it's very obvious from his actions. Trump doesn't care who you are, what your skin color looks like, anything about you, except can he make money? He's a businessman, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that's what he does. He just makes deals and makes money, and, you know, sometimes he defaults and goes bankrupt, but it's the art of the deal, right?
Who hasn't once in a while, you know?
Well, there's that Robert Kiyosaki fella, the Rich Dad, Poor Dad author. He's really big on telling everybody to get out of the dollar and get into gold, silver, and Bitcoin. Not bad
advice. Dogecoin, man.
Oh, Doge, really? To the moon, huh?
To the moon.
Yeah, all right. Well, Bitcoin as well, I saw on Friday, it topped out a little over the 61,000 mark. If you had gotten in even just a year ago, you're already celebrating. But, you know, the Kiyosaki guy, he's a huge Trump fella. And, dude, he gets censored all the time, I've been noticing. Trump is friends with these massive billionaires who also, if you look at Kiyosaki, he gets a lot of shit because he's bankrupted 4 times or declared bankruptcy. But he's also a billionaire. So, and Trump's the same way. He's a billionaire, I believe, or now just a 100 millionaire. What's he valued at these days after all these lawsuits and everything that he's got to pay?
Negative something? I don't know. I'm sure they're going to take it all.
If I'm not mistaken, Trump, the only guy who lost money becoming president, right?
Yeah, that's incredible. Incredible.
Take a look at
did
Obama.
Did you see anything with Dana White?
I did not. What went down with the Dana
from
White?
UFC. There's a clip going around about him talking about why he's so open about his support for Donald Trump.
Oh, no, I did not see this.
A lot of people ask him, like, you know, you get a lot of shit. You probably lose fans. You know what I mean? He always says, I don't give a fuck. You know?
That's right.
And the story is the beginning of the UFC, they were like going bankrupt, like they had nothing and nobody would even host them. Vegas, nobody, you know what I mean? Couldn't even get a venue. And Donald Trump called him up and told him, yeah, we'll make room for you. You could have it at the Taj Mahal.
All right, man. Yeah. Is this Atlantic City?
Yeah.
All right.
And apparently that was like the first couple UFCs. He let him do it there, and he even showed up, you know, and he stayed and everything. And he just said that, like, then when he, you know, years later, he's running for president. I guess Trump even told him, you don't have to support me. You don't have to say you do. I know you have a lot to lose and everything. And he just said, fuck no. You know, you were there for me. I'm going to be open about it. And he just talks about how he was a great guy in there. And he talks about, like, even as the business was getting bigger and bigger, Trump was always like the biggest fan, would even call him up as soon as he heard the news about like a big contract or something, you know?
Yeah.
Just to congratulate him. I don't know. It gives a, it shines a different light on who he is. You
well,
know?
The only light we really get is this filtered one through the legacy media lens, and they want to paint this guy like we've just been joking about the pretzel logic. You have to twist your mind up into to you know truly accept this cartoonish version of Donald Trump, where he's a bumbling buffoon and broke and bankrupt, but also simultaneously this billionaire who's going to be a dictator and take over the world. You know, well, maybe he's just a businessman who decided, you know, I've done my stuff as a business guy. I'm towards the end of my run here, and I'm going to do the president thing. You know, I'm going to do politics.
And that's why they, you know, on that Bill Maher show, they kept bringing up the fact the only thing Trump ever did was a tax cut. The only thing he ever did was the tax cut for the rich. Why would the middle class man support him? Dude, the middle class man is not stupid. But we know, no matter who's in power, the rich are getting their handouts. They're to get, you know what I mean? They're getting their cuts.
Yes.
It's no secret the Democrats are doing it too. The only difference is Trump was out there in the open doing it, and it really didn't matter because it kind of did trickle down in that there were jobs and people were making money. The economy was doing good, you know?
It's no secret who Trump is. Everybody knows he's a wealthy fat cat who's lived his life shitting on golden toilets, literally.
Yeah, he's open about it.
All right.
He brags about it.
He had a famous television show called The Apprentice, where he danced to the song Money and threw actual wads of cash into the camera.
Dude, I gotta tell you, you know what I watched yesterday?
I can't wait.
The roast of Donald Trump.
Ooh, very nice. All right, man.
It is crazy. It was crazy just to watch, like, who was in the crowd, you know what I mean? And the way they treated, like, Melania and stuff. It was like, dude, he was one of them.
Yeah, he was a celebrity.
And one of the funniest parts is it was 2011. And he, I guess, remember he was making comments about running against Obama in 2012.
That's right.
And so there were, dude, so many jokes about how you would never be president, how you'd be the worst president of the world. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then, you know, 5 years later, he ended up doing it.
And think of how much more sour the tone became 5 years later from those exact same people.
That's what I couldn't believe. And then they were playing clips from The Apprentice. Bro, everybody wanted to be on that show.
Well, he had
all these celebrities. Yes. You know, they all tried to be his apprentice.
Yes, man.
That's crazy.
I think it's hard for people to fathom, but Trump, back in those days, was beloved.
Yeah, no, they really did like him. They wanted, you know, and then something changed. He became a Republican.
The Republican.
But you got to see his, when he goes up there and talks at the end, you could just, looking back at it now, you can see he was honing in on that presidential speech there, you know?
He was already flirting at that time with running, and maybe even, I thought he did go for it in 2008 for a little bit and then dropped out.
Really? No.
I think he did. I thought that was the first time he, or maybe not, maybe it was 2012 that he finally went for it. I really thought that was when he started going into the politic scene there, but either way, I mean, it's just no secret who Trump is. Everybody knows he's this mogul, real estate financier fella who's just always been swimming in money his whole life. He was gifted millions as a child, which makes it all the more bizarre and outrageous to have this clip of these guests that were on Morning Joe, or Morning Kool-Aid, as Mike likes to call it. couple fellas who decided that they were going to write an in-depth book with statistics, science, and math, basically proving that there is currently a swelling of white rural rage happening outside of the urban areas. And this is a juicy one. Mike, you sent me a snippet of it. I went and found the original and snagged a little bit of the opening because Mika Brzezinski really lays it on thick to kind of juice you up and get you really jacked for this Biden-Trump comparison and the fact that Trump is clearly supported by these white supremacists out there in the farmland. They throw it all in here. They definitely insist on the whiteness, the rurality of these people's lives, the fact that they're farmers, and the fact that they're homophobic and sexist and bigoted, and they are the most violent group of people in America right now. It's unbelievable. These guys, the way they describe farmers, man.
For those that are only listening, it's two fat, middle-aged white men.
Yeah, that's right. And Mika Brzezinski, I can assume, not natively born here. So we got this clip here, and they go deep on the characteristics of these rural people. It's pretty crazy how much they hate those they don't understand, like everybody who's not living on the coastal cities right now.
Okay. Anybody who's not in Boys Town running up on down the street in rainbow suspenders and short shorts. Like, yeah, you're right. These guys are the problem in the rural area. All right. The farmer who's just working.
This is a good one here. And I've noticed the uptick lately. Joy Reid, everybody at MSNBC and CNN and all these news stations, they're starting to really go after Christians. They're really focusing on religious zealots from the Christian fanatical right. All right.
Oh, so, I heard Christians vote MAGA.
Yeah, man. So they're, you know, they must be stopped. So here we go. MSNBC, they're going to lay it thick on the extremism going on the right.
And as we barrel toward a likely rematch of the 2020 election, one candidate continues to have a hold over white rural voters. But it's not Joe Biden, seen here as a boy on the right side of your screen who went to public school.
Scranton Joe, he's a man of the people. He went out back and taught Corn Pop a thing or two with the rusty barrel and the razor blade, man. Come on. Scranton Joe, you know Scranton Joe. He's just like you and me.
You showed me a picture of him as a kid. What about the last 60 years he spent as a politician sucking money off of foreign agencies?
40-year career politician. He's just a blue-collar guy just like you and me. Did you hear about his poor, young, confused son? He's just a kid, man.
Oh, yeah. And he has a son that died in the Army. Well, not really. He just served in the Army. Died years later of a brain tumor.
His son, Bo, died defending this country against Islamic terrorists. Wait, what's that? We're pro-terrorists now? He died. Okay,
he died killing those dirty Jews. Yeah. Oh, we can't say that either?
Oh, whoops. Oh, man.
Russians?
Were we fighting the Russians in the 90s? What's going on here?
All right,
here we go. Scranton Joe, man. He's just one of the guys.
As a boy on the right side of your screen who went to public school, is the son of a used car salesman, and was born to a middle-class family in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
It's Scranton Joe. His dad was a car salesman, man. Come on, his mom made pie. She'd cool it off in the windowsill every afternoon.
My dad would tell me, Joey, see those two men kissing? That's love. That's love. No, this thing men and women have been doing for the beginning of time. Not real love. Those two men.
Yeah. That's love. That's right, Joey boy.
1958. Scranton, PA.
Just two fellas making out on the street. Totally normal. It happened all the time back then.
I'm going to go tell him to just start butt fucking so you can see what real love is, boy.
That's right. Oh, my God.
It is Trump here on the left side, a private school educated son of a New York City real estate tycoon who became a millionaire at 8 years old and didn't have to serve because he claimed he had bone spurs in his little feet. Why is it that
Biden didn't serve either? Biden got out of it too.
I mean, how did Joe Biden avoid Vietnam? Do we have any answers? He definitely wasn't in it.
Well, even back then, they said he wasn't mentally fit.
Oh, really? Is that... What happened there? How did he avoid even any mention of it?
Yeah, he received... I know he... I've done this... I've looked into it before. He got... yeah. He got multiple draft deferments.
All right.
He was supposed to get drafted.
Wow. But he just kind of skirted it somehow, some way. We're not going to talk about it, though. We'll talk about bone spur.
Oh, wow.
Over here.
He got five deferments. One for asthma.
Wow.
Oh, and you pussy.
I assume there was one for his stutter that he's been afflicted with his entire life. Except for the 40 years where he served in the Senate. And for the 8 years he was vice president. And then it just came back miraculously when he's running for president.
Oh, okay, so here's your everyday, just like you and me, Scranton Joe, Frank.
Yeah, man.
He received student draft deferments, once as an undergrad, and then later as a law student, you know, just like every other guy. And then after a medical exam, for asthma.
Okay.
He wasn't allowed in.
Wow. Scranton Joe, he's just one of the guys, blue collar, just like you and me.
Yeah. So that's, and they still to this day make fun of Trump for his bone spurs. Come on. Biden did the same thing.
What a wacky little tidbit to sneak in there, Mika. You know, like completely unnecessary. God. You know, Trump, he's known for doing a lot of other stuff other than the bone spurs. I don't know if you know this. He was president for 4 years. It's kind of crazy.
Well, plus, you in doing so, you made it sound like Biden didn't avoid the draft.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
He did exactly what Trump did. So, next, you know.
All right, this is a good clip. There's some more meat on this bone.
So much to a group he couldn't be more different from. Joining us now, professor of political science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Tom Schaller, and journalist and opinion writer Paul Waldman. Their new book, out tomorrow, is entitled White Rural Rage, The Threat to American Democracy.
It's a kid's book. It's for the family, really. Something upbeat, positive,
lighthearted.
You could all enjoy on the porch on a summer evening with some Kool-Aid.
Right? Rural Rage, The Threat to American Democracy. And Tom, we'll start with you. Why are white rural voters a threat to democracy at this point? You would think...
They've said the word white now 3 or 4 times. Just keep that in mind how many times they're going to throw. They're going to focus on this.
We pointed out, looking at Joe Biden's background and Donald Trump's, that the opposite would be true.
I mean, we lay out the fourfold interconnected threat that white rural voters pose to the country. First of all, and we show 30 polls and national studies.
And first of all, did we mention they're white? We just want to make sure that you understand that. One of the major offenses of these people is they are white, okay? That's the major top offense.
White rural people. White rural voters are a threat to America?
Oh, yeah.
How is a vote a threat?
Didn't you see Bloodthirst? Or what, the Bloodhound Gang? No, what are those guys? The Blood Tribe. Oh,
Blood
man.
Tribe.
They're going to be marching up the street next to you tomorrow, man. Look out, dude.
Those white, man. Yeah.
They're in a U-Haul coming to a city near you. All right.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue down this white bashing. This is great.
First of all, and we show 30 polls and national studies to demonstrate this. So we provide the receipts in Chapter 6. They're the most racist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, and anti-gay geodemographic group in the country. Second, they're the most conspiracist group. QAnon support and subscribers, election denialism, COVID denialism and scientific skepticism, Obama birtherism. Third, anti-democratic sentiments. They don't believe in an independent press, free speech. They're most likely to say the president should be able to act unilaterally without any checks from Congress or the courts or their bureaucracy. They're also the most strongly white nationalist and white Christian nationalist. And fourth, they are most likely to excuse or justify violence as an acceptable alternative to peaceful public discourse.
So you mentioned a lot of negative factors.
And when they say that, I love it because I've heard this for so many times. When they say that white rural or right Republicans, they support like violence or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Versus peaceful protesting.
That's right.
What they're referring to is January 6th versus the Summer of Love, Chaz,
yes.
Burning down precincts. You know what I mean? That was peaceful protest.
That's right.
Those fires were peaceful. They peacefully burned down that used car dealership, right?
Yes.
Jan 6 was the violence that they support.
Yeah, that you guy know? Peacefully slapped, swung his skateboard at Kyle Rittenhouse. Peacefully.
Give him a peaceful concussion. You know?
It's crazy. They want you to forget Kyle Rittenhouse, don't they, right? They don't want you to be reminded that in the court of law, it ended up being found that he was in the right to defend the community with the rest, because the communities were under attack. Peaceful attack. It was a peaceful attack, but they were under attack nonetheless. To the point where my favorite image of the Summer of Love in 2020 was that Florida couple with the gun and the pink.
Oh, yeah.
He's wearing like the pink polo shirt, and the lady's holding the pistol, and he's got like the AK-47, and they're just like, they're ready. They're ready for that Summer of Love peaceful protest to go into their neighborhood, as everybody
those
should
be. Peaceful.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Wild times, dude. But no, we need to be worried about these farmers and their white rage.
White rage. But that's what they mean when they're saying they support violent outbreaks and over peaceful protests. You know what I mean? That's what they mean.
That's wild stuff, man. Oh, dude, it's so crazy. Again, I was fixated on how many times they use the word white. How they're very intent on making everybody believe that these are violent people who want to overthrow the United States government. You know, the guys riding around with their American flags on their trucks. These people want to overthrow the country they love more than anybody else in this place.
I know. They're the only ones that love America. They literally are the only ones that love America at this point.
It's so nuts.
You guys, your whole point of writing this book and going on this crusade is to stop these people from voting. So you're going to stop the people from voting, and then it doesn't matter, because even if they do go vote, you're going to take their candidate off the ballot. And then at what point are you protecting democracy? You know?
When
you're
is
saying
that?
They're the danger to when, democracy?
When is the moment where you're the tyrant? You're the dictator. You're the authoritarian. You know, those draconian measures during the COVID lockdowns, those were democratic, man. It was the democratic governors and those in leadership locally who were enforcing the mask mandates and the school closures and the distancing at the restaurants. And we were victims to these dictators, these mini dictators throughout our nation during COVID. You folks are the fascists. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah.
And
COVID exposed you.
Well, and then also threatening that if you if we allow you to vote in this guy, he's going to ruin democracy, so we're going to take him off the ballot so you have nobody else to vote for to save democracy. I hate to break it to you, but you sound like the tyrant, man. I think you guys are the ones ending democracy.
You just ended democracy when you took him off the ballot. What don't you understand?
It's endless gaslighting with these freaks. I mean, Jared Polis over here has been going on and on how it's not his fault for declaring he's a sanctuary city, that all the migrants came here. It's the fault of Greg Abbott and the Republicans.
I know. How dare you call my bluff?